And this is a good example, is that there was a helicopter that was shot down in some action near just north of Vung Tau in Baria province. And they sent in a small Vietnamese Marine force, I think it was a platoon or something in there, and they met some resistance, and they followed that up with a company, and this company met the resistance, and they set the battalion in there, and then the VC sprung about a 3 or 4 battalion ambush on this Vietnamese Marine battalion, and just chopped them to pieces. This is where Captain Pete Eller, USMC, got wounded, and he later was awarded a Silver Star for the action. And this is where a Captain Cook, C-O-O-K, I believe, USMC, was wounded and captured. We never did get any word on what his result were. This had happened right around the end of December of 64. He was over there, OJ, on-the-job training from Okinawa for about 30 days, and he was in this action there. And of course, there were many other people that were involved, and some were killed and wounded. And of course, I don't know how many dead that the Vietnamese Marine 3rd Battalion caught. I think it was about 200 to 300, and of course, their battalion's only shaped up at 500. But it pretty much wiped them out. But their big tactic is to set a trap, bait a trap somehow, whether it something that attracts you into throwing in your force and sort of doing it quick-like without the normal security measures of movement, and then they'll spring it on you. And I know it's hard to imagine a battalion ambush, but by God, it can be done because of the terrain and things like that. They're easy to hide, these units, all over. If you don't put out your proper security and move slow enough, and you move through the open areas, not getting into the dense undergrowth, they're going to nail you.
What kind of terrain was this, sir? Could you describe it a little more?
It was near a rubber plantation, swamp, mountains, and jungle. It's all a combination of all three of them. I don't know. I wasn't actually there in the area. I talked to the people, Captain Eller and such.
In your area, sir, what were the operations of the mangrove like?
Well, maybe I can best describe, if I can walk through one, I'll let you know just what it was like. One of the things I did, by the way, while I was in there was I did a lot of aerial observation. In fact, I don't know how many missions I got in there, over 60 or something like that. I was awarded 3 air medals for this aerial observation, and I am not even I wasn't a qualified AO when I got there. But it had to be done, and the Vietnamese couldn't get their O-1F aircraft up in the air to do it, and we had one that was assigned to us. Major Bronars was able to get one assigned to us, an Army O-1F, this is like a Piper Cub, the observation type aircraft, assigned to us on a daily basis. We got one a day. This was from General Westmoreland, who was Commander-in-Chief of Military Assistance Command, Vietnam. And so we needed an observer, so one of my additional duties, I'd go up and I'd set up an observation schedule, and we'd go over there and we'd fly over Rungsat Special Zone. And normal altitude was about 1,500 feet. 1,500 feet, generally they wouldn't shoot at you at 1,500 feet. And I wasn't worried about 50 caliber machine gun fire at the time, as we had none reported in the area. At 1,500 feet, though, you'd have been a sitting duck for 50s. But they all had was small arms. And we would go and observe things. I had spotted mortar fire from there, from the aircraft. Many a time I went up and supported ground operations. And what we would do is they would pop off a smoke grenade or something down there, and we'd fly and look around and see and tell them where they were on the map. That's about the only way they could navigate. And other times, if we could see them, we would check areas around, see if we could penetrate slight areas or where they were going in the mangrove, or else look on the streams and waterways and spot any junk or sampan movement, and let them know what their flanks were like. And then we also acted as a radio relay, of course. We could, if one of them got wounded down there, they had radio communications with us, and we could call in a medical evacuation helicopter, which I had to do one time. There was a Lieutenant McDevitt, U.S. Army, that got wounded in a fight, and we directed in the medical evacuation helicopter to get him out. Now, that's one thing we always required if we were going on the ground, was we had an aircraft up in the sky that let us know where we are, and we'd have somebody to communicate with, because once you got in a mangrove, we didn't have any communications with home base. That was it. You were locked on. You couldn't get out. So in case of any activity, we had to have some sort of communications out for support. Well, on one of these runs, I had spotted some unusual activity in an area, and we'd noted it, and I'd gone back to the headquarters there and talked to the Vietnamese, and we decided to send a sweeping operation out and check this area out. And it was myself, and this was in May of 65, May 17th, I think it was. And Sergeant First Class Courtney, a U.S. Army sergeant, who was one of the assistant advisors there, Rungsat, I think there was about seven altogether at the time, Major Bronars and myself and some other Army types. And we went out. Now, we departed from Na Bay on board River Assault Group boats. These were modified LCMs, LCVPs, and such, and we moved out before sunrise on these boats and moved on down the main ship channel and through these various little rivers till we came to the point where we would jump off and move into the mangrove. Well, this is, they'd pull up, and we'd had arranged an aircraft overhead once we started moving in. We got in there, and we got off the craft, and immediately started walking in mud, because this is how a lot of the bank is. It's mud, foot and a half deep, and we started working into a defoliated area, which is, we had the place chemically sprayed along the Long Tao River, the main ship channel, for about 500 meters on either side for the entire length, so that we'd have more security for the ships moving up and down, and also aerial observation to check enemy movement. And we started working through this defoliated area, and this was still, you couldn't see too well horizontally, but you could penetrate it from the air quite a little bit better. And there were areas in there where there was water and dense growth. Even though it had died and it turned brown, it had all just fallen down there. It's still hard to work through. And then we had many, many little streams. A stream might only be 15 feet, 20 feet wide, but the depth of it could be also 8 to 10 or 15 feet, mainly because this was all tidal and this thing was washed in and out twice a day, so there was quite deep. And we had a Vietnamese lieutenant that was up in leading the unit. Well, immediately, this lieutenant had steered us wrong, and we encountered one stream that we weren't supposed to encounter, and it took us a little while to get the unit straightened out and everything. By the way, we move in column through these the mangrove. There's no such thing as putting out flanks in most of the area because it's just too thick. You have no control, and you've got to pick your way through. If you want to start cutting your way through the mangrove, well, you'd never get anywhere. You might spend 6 hours chopping your way through 300 or 400 yards, and what you got to do is move in a couple of kilometers. So you got to pick your ways. And you can pick your way around most of this stuff, but it's by column. And of course, we got to point out, and you don't use any obvious trails or things like that. You stay off of them as much as possible. Well, we worked our way in. It started raining. We lost the aircraft overhead because the radio went out, and we continued on until, I'd say we covered maybe 2.5 kilometers in about 4 or 5 hours. And suddenly we spotted what appeared to be up ahead. We got the word and came back. I was with the company commander. By the way, our force totaled about 70 men. That's the company. The company rates 135 TO, but after you take out the sick, lame, lazy, and those that had to stay back to watch the gear in the rear, you ended up with 70. And no heavy weapons, because they're too tough to lug along, and there's all small arms and BARs and things of this nature. I was armed with an M2 carbine, and a M79 grenade launcher. I was carrying that also. We got the word that they spotted about six or eight men in a certain area there, and we started deploying. One platoon deployed on the front, and then we had an enveloping force that we moved around, and what we wanted to do was surprise them. Well, in the process of moving around like this, somehow the other, I think it was the enveloping force, they made a little bit too much noise, and we got discovered, and we were fired upon. Now, the ranges in here were extremely close, I'd say about 30 meters. What we hit appeared to be about a VC company, about the same strength as what we had, and there was a tremendous firefight that went on. And of course, you don't, once the firefight starts, you don't see anything. It just is a hell of a lot of shooting because there's no targets to shoot at. You shoot it at where the fire is coming from. It's because it's it's that dense. And of course, there's mud and water all around the place. Well, after a firefight that lasted, a very intense firefight, small arms that lasted, 10 to 15 minutes, including rifle grenades thrown and everything else. I mean, they pop them up through the foliage if they can. They come down, hit and miss proposition. It broke off, and we moved into this area here. Now, this part of this spot here that we're going into was water was deep, maybe 5 or 10 feet. Other spots there were high ground. Other spots there was mud. We suffered 2 killed and 1 wounded. And by the time we got into the area, we didn't discover any VC bodies. There were some blood spots there, and of course it's always a VC tactic to carry off any dead or wounded, so we have no idea what casualties we gave to them. We destroyed their base, and we got documents and certain things like that, and then we had to, we took our 2 dead and our 1 wounded, and it was fairly serious wounded, and we started hacking our way out. Now we had to move out by a different route than what we came in, or else we'd be inviting an ambush. And we didn't know exactly the size of the force that we encountered. In the meantime, I've been calling on radio and I couldn't get any response. We started hacking our way out, and we finally got an aircraft on the radio. It was our observer. And I called in armed helicopters to hit the areas where I thought the Viet Cong were, and at the same time called in the medical evacuation helicopter, and these aircraft got fired at, and they shot up the area pretty well, and we worked our way out. I think it took us about 2.5 hours to work our way out to a place where we could chop out a little spot for the helicopter to set down and to pick up the 2 dead and the 1 wounded man, which they did. It was those medical evacuation chopper pilots are fantastic. He had about 3 to 4 feet clearance, or maybe 5 feet clearance from his rotor blades where he set that thing down in, and that's how tight the area was. And then from there, we worked our way out. But that was a typical operation.
Sir, was psychological warfare employed in the run set?
Yes. We had Sergeant Courtney, who was on that operation with me, who's also a World War II and Korean vet, was our psychological warfare officer as such. He was an officer in Korea, but he got out, came back in, but he was a real fine NCO, and he handled psychological warfare. We distributed many propaganda pamphlets and such from the air. We used loudspeaker broadcasts. We had psychological warfare teams, both Vietnamese teams, go around to the various villages and show movies and put up posters and make speeches and things like that. And there's a heavy emphasis on it because the Viet Cong place an extremely heavy emphasis on psychological warfare.
What was the climate, sir, in your general area?
The climate is as best described as extremely hot and humid. It's such that when you go on an operation, you're always muggy and hot and warm. The uniforms we wore, by the way, were a lightweight jungle uniform that we got from the Vietnamese Marine Corps. You couldn't operate in the Vietnamese utility. It was just too heavy, and And it would get twice as heavy after it got wet, and it would never dry and probably rot very quickly. It's just not designed for that tropical an area. But you got out, you're always wet, let's put it that way. Your underclothes are always wet, and of course in moving through the mangrove, you're constantly in and out of the salt water and always up in the water up to your knees, so that you're wet all day long, all the time you're in there. And the only time you dried off is when you took all your clothes off and rubbed yourself down and put on something dry. Now, the outside of your uniforms, these lightweight uniforms, they dry off pretty much. But the humidity was very high, a very, very humid, hot feeling, which you got used to, by the way, after about 6 or 8 weeks.
Was this just only in this area so humid, or was it in the other?
No, it was just that in the mangrove, it was sort of tightened in and humid because it retained the heat in the daytime. In the other areas, there was probably a little bit cooler. But still, this was generally the weather. Now, as far as sweating, I can tell you that I used to put away, we carried these flexible canteens that carried two quarts, and I used to put that away in about 5 hours. One canteen was not enough to operate on. I didn't wear a helmet because it was too hot in there. Besides, it made noise, it was too heavy. You traveled very light. While I was over there in Vietnam, I lost 30 pounds. And that was strictly through sweating and the combination of diarrhea. You always had diarrhea coming and going. You would and you wouldn't have it. And that was a big thing. And that's the way, of course, as I lost the weight, it did me a lot of good. And I became hardened to the thing. But it takes a while to acclimate yourself to it.
When did you leave Vietnam, sir?
I left Vietnam the 14th of August, 65. Flew out on Continental Airlines Pan Am 707 jet. That's how I flew out to the Far East, and that's how I left Vietnam. It was a real nice flight.
Well, thank you very much, sir. This has been Marine Sergeant Roy Johnson of the Base Informational Services Office, Marine Corps Base, Camp Lejeune, interviewing Major Edward C. Tipsis, who was assigned as an assistant advisor, RungSat Special Zone, and an artillery battalion advisor with the 2nd Vietnamese Infantry Division in the Republic of Vietnam. The classification of this tape is secret.